Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with repeat guest Aram Grigorian, nutrition coach and host of the Real Coaches Summit. Aram and I spoke about common misfalls in the gym, how to get better at self-care, and creating a life that truly feels good and is sustainable. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coach. Coaches, just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now on to my conversation with Aram. Aram Grigorian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back, and so much has changed.
All right, yeah, or not, but nonetheless, some things will have changed. I think I've had two other repeat guests on here, so I'm super excited to have you back though, because I know, we share a lot of similar views, and also just in general, I really enjoyed our first conversation. And since we had our first conversation, we actually met in person at your Real Coaches Summit. I really, really, really enjoyed that. I actually want to start off talking about that. So you organize that on an annual basis, and I think has it always been in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I started it in 2023 and it's been in Las Vegas since. And I'm going to keep it in Vegas until I decide not to.
Amazing. Yeah. So my first question, I wasn't going to start off with this, but my first question now is, what motivates you to put on such a huge event? I know, or I can only imagine how much work and energy you put into that. And of course, I mean, not talking about the financial resources, I think you even mentioned last time that you actually had to pay a lot of it out of your own pocket, because I mean, it is expensive putting on such a big event. So, yeah, please tell me what motivates you to put on an event like this.
Because nobody else is.
That's a very good answer. Yeah. And you really want to bring a lot of good resources together for other coaches. Is that sort of
I don't see any practical education being delivered in a convenient, reputable way outside of the initial certifications that a lot of professionals get. And that was really the biggest void in my career. It's like, okay, you got from point A to point B. You went from not starting anything to now you have some base of knowledge.
it?
But then from like point B to point C, there's this long gap that nobody is serving. Because a lot of it ends up being business coaching or scaling or systems or sales or acquisition-based education. It's all about like, how do we get more clients? But to me, I got clients the old-fashioned way, which was prove to them that I know what I'm talking about, help them for a lower cost or for free completely, and then earn their trust. And that took me 15 years. And now I think people just like our clients want the fast results, the fat loss, a lot of fitness coaches want to be able to go from making no money to making five figures every month because that's what they're being promised by a lot of these business organizations, but they're not good at what they do. They don't understand the basics of human physiology. They don't understand communication skills. They don't understand how to actually help people design plans that are sustainable and that work. Those are the gaps that I'm trying to fill while also being able to bring people together. Because as an online coach, and especially, I mean, you understand you're in a different country, it's sometimes very lonely to stand behind your computer all day long and have in passing conversations with people, but never really truly connecting with anybody. So, by having this opportunity for all of us to get together and meet at least once a year, I think it reignites our passion for this industry. I think it allows us to become a little bit more community based, which I think every human being needs. I think people are generally very much better off when they have community or a sense of community. And then it helps us grow our network. So that way, when we do have opportunities to collaborate like this, right, we do. And this is how this industry gets better, in my opinion.
And you had such fabulous guests at the conference as well, and such a wonderful variety. Like, honestly, I thought it was brilliant having people like Dr. Crystal and like talk about things like GLP-1 and things like that, but also at the same time more the mindset aspect. Like Jamie, I think Coach Jamie, I forgot what her surname is. Like she just like speaking bluntly about like this is how you need to dig deep yourself as well in order to be able to help your clients the best way. People that talk about pelvic health, like it was a wonderful variety, really good food also, I will say. I love that that was included because I mean, I think I mentioned that last time I've been on at conferences before where then everybody had to leave and go out to a restaurant and then you lose 2 hours because you order food and blah, 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 but you provided the food. So truly everybody, I can only recommend going to the Real Coaches Summit next. Is it April again? In
Yeah. Yep, April 26th to the 28th. Yeah, I like having the all-inclusive aspect of it because that was always a big problem that I had with events is, you would go and unless you paid for a VIP ticket, which sometimes can cost you north of $1,500 to $2,000 on top of all your travel, it was really the event host's way for you to pay for proximity to the speakers. And it was almost like a gatekeeping tactic. Like they'll speak, but then if you really want to connect with them and learn from them more intimately, you have to pay extra. And I don't like doing that because to me, it's like this event is only existing because people come to it. So I'm not going to punish the people that show up to the event by charging them more than what I need to charge them to cover my costs. But I also make it reasonable because I don't pay my speakers. In my opinion, I shouldn't have to pay you as a professional who's been in this industry for 10 plus years to share your knowledge and expertise. Because 9 out of 10 times, if you have continued education offerings, you can sell those to the audience anyway. So here's an opportunity for you to stand in front of 250 hungry industry professionals who want to learn from you. I'll pay for your hotel room, but it's a business expense for you also. So show up. Give back to the industry that made you who you are today and that made you well off financially and give something back because at one point you were in those seats too. And there's a lot of industry professionals who think they're a lot more important than they really are and they want to make more money and they want to charge for appearances. And those are just not people that I'm ever going to have on stage. I would rather have somebody like you come up with a presentation and teach real frameworks with real clientele base like you have. And teach people your methods of helping people versus having somebody who hasn't even coached anybody in the last 5 years because they have a team of people doing the work for them.
Oh, I think that's a great selection criteria for having the like what kind of person you want to have on stage because truly, I mean, it is the people that are in the trenches as well or that have their fingers on the pulse that can transmit that the best to current coaches, really. So I think that's wonderful. And I will say like one thing that has stood out to me about you from the beginning on, whether it pertains to the Coaches Summit or whether it pertains to just in general everything on your social media, is how responsive you are, like how quickly you respond to people. And I can only imagine that that is one of the aspects that that your clients really, really value about you, that you're there for them. It's not like an automated message that tells them, "Oh, I will get back to you in 3 days' time with my response." You know, they need you when they need you, but at the same time, my question to you is, what do you think is reasonable when it comes to a coach's availability towards their clients, at the same time protecting yourself as well, though? Because sometimes, you know, if someone's like at a restaurant and they're like, "Oh, what should I eat here?" It's not always the best thing, truly, to respond to them right away. Like they need to learn to make their own decisions too. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so I think availability should be as open-ended as it needs to be. Like I mean, obviously if I'm asleep, I'm not available. But if I'm awake, outside of training, eating, taking care of my daily chores, tasks, whatever, like human responsibilities, I own and run a business and my business is client-centered. So my clientele is my number one priority outside of the other stuff I have going on in my life. So I think the problem is that coaches don't set expectations clearly or early enough with their frequency of communication, with their modes of communication, with their response times. I tell everybody right off the bat, if you send me a message and I'm awake, you're going to get a response from me in minutes, if not tens of minutes. And the only way that it's ever going to be slower than that is if I'm asleep or I'm traveling. or I otherwise tell you that I'm not going to be available as quickly as usual. Because to me, there's an aspect of it that I think can be slippery. Like if you're always holding people's hands, they're not going to learn anything. But the way that I communicate, I use everything as a learning opportunity. Like for example, today I had a client that left back in January and just came back. And I sent her new workouts. And she's like, well, I don't like XYZ movements. I don't want to do them. Give me something else. So instead of just saying, okay, I asked why. And she's like, well, it's a crowded gym. I said, yeah, but lateral bounds are not that hard to do even inside of a crowded gym. Like you'll be able to find some space. But then I dug a little bit deeper and kept asking why. And eventually it came up, which, well, I don't feel comfortable because it's embarrassing to me to be in public doing things that I don't know how to do. So right there is an amazing coaching opportunity that a lot of coaches will not take because they don't know how to have those conversations. Whereas for me, I immediately told her, I said, nobody but you cares that you're in that gym. Everybody else is so self-conscious and so worried about how they look that they're not paying attention to you. And if this is the reason why you can't do very important, what I believe, like, I'm talking about lateral bounds, which are explosive movements that human beings stop doing after a certain age. And as we lose our explosiveness, we lose our ability to be strong, to be stable. And those are things that if we don't train them, we lose them. And if we lose them, that could be very detrimental to our longevity and to our health. Copenhagen planks, which are one of the best ways to stabilize your hips and to improve your hip health. Standing weighted abductions, which are sometimes better than the machine-based abductions because there's a better range of motion. So there's a rhyme and a reason for what I do and what I say, and I don't give you things I think are unnecessary. So if you have a problem with that, I'm going to want to understand what your problem is with it, and I'm going to use it as a learning opportunity to be able to teach you something in that moment. And if after I've taught you something, you still are resistant to it, then you have to look at two things. Yes, of course, there are alternatives to it that I will give you. But I will also set the expectation that your resistance to change is a big missed opportunity for you because if you're not coachable and you keep doing what you're comfortable with, you're not going to improve most likely.
That's such a great point. Like it is, I mean, everybody, myself included, it is exactly those things where we feel the resistance that we should be looking into. Like, at the very least, asking ourselves why. It doesn't mean we always need to give in, but like, why is there a resistance? I think that's a really great point. And I can absolutely see how a lot of coaches, most coaches, myself in the past probably as well, would have just said, okay, let's not do that. Here's an alternative. Or even said, like, you need to do them though, like, like one or the other instead of asking, because that's very empowering if you actually include the client as well in the, hey, let's dig into this why. And if you still don't want to do them, okay, we'll find an alternative. That's okay. I respect that. But yeah, I kind of want to stay on that topic of like exercises that people or that we as humans don't do as much as we probably should be doing. So you mentioned some explosive work, you mentioned lateral work, something like, or as well, something like the Copenhagen plank, where we're working our adductors. What are some other movement patterns, exercises, general, training modalities that we're not doing as much as we should be doing, in your opinion?
So I want to paint with some context because I think you know me well enough to know that I'm not going to say anything without an explanation. I used to be very, very dogmatic towards just linear bodybuilding style training. A lot of that hasn't changed extremely, but I have incorporated a lot more athletic-based movements into my training modalities for myself and my clients because most of the people I serve are 35 or older. And most of them really are more in their 40s and 50s. And these are very much use it or lose it based skill sets that, again, will contribute to frailty as we age. So, yes, we certainly can get stronger by doing bodybuilding style workouts. But if we don't know how to jump, if we don't know how to lunge or sprint or bound, then anytime we do those types of things for whatever reason, we might have a much higher degree of risk of injury. So I think that there needs to be more of, not necessarily variety, but there needs to be some willingness to explore movement. And I don't coach exercises. I coach movements, right? For me, it's can you hinge? Can you squat? Can you lunge? Can you pull? Can you push? Those are the human movement basics. I think everybody should be doing some variation of those things. And then, depending on the individual, we can certainly extrapolate other ways to have them move. Do we want them to rotate? Do we want them to sprint? Do we want them to, and it doesn't mean like just because you can't do a 30-inch box jump doesn't mean you can't just do a jump squat standing in the same place. It's still jumping. It's still being able to learn, teach your body how to absorb force when you land, which is a very vital, critical skill set, especially as an older adult. Something as simple as stepping off a curb, can tear somebody's ACL. It can pop their Achilles. Myself included, when I was 2 years ago, I tore my Achilles because I was not prepared to play recreational sports, and I signed up for a flag football league. And within the first 5 minutes of the game, somebody who's as muscular and as lean as I am, which means nothing on a football field, tore his Achilles in 5 minutes. And I don't want other people to suffer from those types of injuries. So I program these things with the intention that you should be a little bit more well-rounded. But at the end of it, the core of body composition improvement is really nutrition. It's obviously building enough muscle to see that there's muscle underneath the fat, and then being able to get the fat down low enough to see the muscle that you have built. And it's not rocket science, it's just time and patience and effort. But I think people overcomplicate training and they get very married to certain exercises or certain movements. I don't care if you want to do a front squat with a barbell. I don't care if you want to do a V squat machine squat. I don't care if you want to do a Smith machine squat. If you're squatting to some variation, I'm happy. Pick the movement that makes the most sense for you. Learn how to progress that movement. Get good at it. Get so good at it that if I was to wake you out of bed at 2 in the morning and asked you to perform that movement, you would do it with no hesitation and no thought process whatsoever. That's what I hope my clients can achieve. And I also want them to have some level of autonomy so that if their environment changes and now they're not in their normal home gym and they have to travel to where you live or to where I live and they have to use a hotel gym or they have no gym at all, can they still perform those movements to some degree with some level of confidence?
That's awesome. I think the autonomy part is huge because it also, to me, automatically incorporates education. Like, if that person knows, okay, technically it doesn't matter whether I'm doing, I'm using the barbell or I'm using the dumbbells or whatever. I am doing this and that movement pattern today, and this is, it doesn't matter whether I'm in the 8 to 10 rep range or 14 to 16 rep range. If they have that awareness, then they can modify their own schedule, and that's really wonderful. I kind of have like the opposite background in the sense that my strength training or resistance training started through CrossFit, so really
Okay.
very functional. And I used to believe for a really long time, like, oh, it has to be free weights, nothing but like machines are super overrated. And I love, maybe it's just my own perception, but I feel like in the space, it's becoming more and more clear that really both are so valuable. Like isolation exercises and machines can be so valuable. At the same time, functional movements, barbells, free weights, etc., so valuable as well. And we shouldn't be so dogmatic as opposed, like, to say one is the quote unquote right way to train and one is the wrong way to train. We can really incorporate both, and as a matter of fact, we can probably achieve our best results if we incorporate both. So, for example, I learned firsthand, because I had some sciatic nerve issues, I learned firsthand that I, for example, wasn't doing enough abduction movements when it comes to like my hips or my glutes in general. So a lot of, yeah, squats and sure, like some RDLs and hip thrusts, yes, but I was hardly doing anything laterally or like hip abduction movements. So that was a big thing that really helped me even just like alleviate pain and balance out muscular imbalances, absolutely.
Training without pain is so critical because our clients don't train often enough, right? So if you reduce the frequency even further, now their potential for results declines. So our number one priority is to keep them as pain-free as possible, ourselves included. And the more we place a training stimulus on somebody or a training frequency on somebody, the more at some point something is going to happen. And if they have an unbalanced program, which for years I personally had, when you train for hypertrophy and you train for size, you're not really varying stuff very often, and you're always moving in one linear direction with no real adjustments to that direction ever. So there's going to become at some point a lot. You get really strong in a very limited range of motion, not specifically range of motion per exercise, right? I can certainly squat deep. I can, I can get my hamstrings to my ankles if I'm doing something quad dominant. That wasn't the issue, but the issue was is I was only training these movements with these machines, and that was it. And that's exactly what set me up for injury in 2023. I wasn't running, I wasn't jumping, I wasn't bounding, I wasn't sprinting, I wasn't doing any type of prehab rehab work. I wasn't doing much unilateral work with my lower body. Everything was bilateral, stable, and heavy. And we understand, I mean, I understand, or at least the way that I teach training to people is that training isn't really the thing that perpetuates or contributes to fat loss. So we're not training to lose fat. Even though our clients are coming to us with body composition goals, it's not the training that contributes to that. It certainly contributes to the musculature that they have underneath their current body fat levels. But we have to focus on things like nutrition, daily movement, and cardiovascular work. Those will be the vehicles for fat loss, and let those do the job that they're supposed to do. Let's use training as a way to stay strong, healthy, and mobile, and try to be as pain-free through all of it as possible. I spoke to a woman yesterday who was running 30 to 35 miles a week and doing 4 days of strength training on top of that. And her goal is to improve her body composition. I said, well, outside of nutrition, you don't really have that many levers left to pull. If you're already training 4 days a week, we certainly can look at it and clean it up. And your training volume is going to probably be detrimental to your future of muscle growth because you can't train much harder than you train. And you can't really add any more volume. And at some point, there's a physiological limit that everybody reaches. And without the help of PEDs or without the help of a very long break, which I do think that taking breaks strategically throughout training cycles for somebody who's very well trained, very experienced. I don't mean somebody who's been going to Orange Theory for 3 years. I mean somebody who's like you or me, who's been exposed to very intense stimulus across a multitude of years, and we really are scraping for the next millimeter of muscle growth. For us, it might make sense to change our focus and approach to something that's not hypertrophy based anymore, and change our approach to something that's more athletic or that's more functional, so to speak, and focus on that for a while to destimulate the body, to get it to be ability to resaturate it later on again, because it'll almost be like another wave of newbie gains if you've taken away that stimulus for some period of time. So right now I'm not training for hypertrophy at all. I don't care if I grow an ounce of muscle. I don't care if I get any stronger. I just want to be able to run pain-free when I run, and I want to be able to maintain my current level of muscle mass. And that's not hard to do with 2 to 3 training sessions per week for anybody that has any meaningful amount of mass. But I also don't expect to change my body composition significantly outside of lowering my fat mass, which isn't hard to do. But I also know that, let's say, for example, in 6 months from now, I changed my focus back to hypertrophy. Well, my body would be hungry for that stimulus because it hasn't seen it in a while. So now, if I go from doing, two sets of squats per week to now I'm doing 4 to 6 sets of squats per week, will my legs grow again? Possibly. And that's the fun part about training is that once you get to a point where you're happy and comfortable with your body composition, how you feel, you could be a lot more flexible and a lot more playful with your training. It doesn't have to be this rigorous, if this or that, then nothing else type of a belief system, which I think everybody's just the wrong people are looking for the best approach, right?
That's so true. Yeah, and I think on top of that, I usually either see people periodize their training or their nutrition, but hardly ever are they in sync. And I mean, of course, I also don't mean the person that's struggling just with consistency and that hardly ever go to the gym. They don't need to periodize their training much. But yeah, like you said, people like us, they might be aware of nutritional periodization, but they're too stubborn to let go of what they're doing with training or have always been doing with training, or then athletes that are well used to periodizing their training, they might not sync up their nutrition with that. I think that's unfortunately a a common problem. I want to go back to what you said about the jumping and the bounding and so on, because I think it's very relevant for my clientele, and I believe you have a similar clientele, like, women kind of going through the menopause transition or even before that or after that. I think there's more and more research coming out that, like, some sort of jumping or that kind of impact is actually also so helpful for preventing osteoporosis or just in general strengthening our bones through that. And I don't know how receptive your women or your clients are to the jumps in general, but exactly like you're saying, often I do get initial pushback, even if it's things like, hey, let's start skip warming up with skipping. Oftentimes it's then like, oh, I haven't skipped in forever. I don't really want to, or I have a little bit of leakage. I don't feel comfortable at the gym, and those kind of things. But yeah, I'd love to hear your take on that. Is that something you try to incorporate regularly or with all your clients?
I'm trying to more and more, again, because I see the value of it. Do I think it's directly contributing to bone density improvements and prevention of osteopenia and osteoporosis? I don't think it's hurting. I think if it's being done safely and it's being done in a scalable way for that individual's ability, then it's not really that high of a risk factor. But it's like anything else, it just makes you more stress resilient and it makes you grittier and tougher. If you can jump and land on your feet, that's a good thing to be able to do. If you can jump sideways, that's a good thing to be able to do. If your body is capable of absorbing force, again, you're just somebody who's tougher and able to handle more bodily stress than somebody else who doesn't do those things. And it's not because I'm trying to turn people into athletes. Because most people don't want to be athletes. Most people don't care. They just want to look better physically with or without clothes. And do I think that stuff contributes to it? Not necessarily, not directly. But why not have that in your back pocket? Because again, you're going to miss a step when you're walking down the stairs at some point. People fall during the winter time because they slip on ice. And if you can absorb force and your body's just grittier, why not give people that gift for the rest of their life? And it also builds confidence. It builds a level of confidence that they previously probably didn't have. And it also takes away that stigma of I look silly or I'm too old to worry about being athletic. Well, it's like, no, you're only thinking that way because you've been indoctrinated to think that way. Just because you're 50 or 60 doesn't mean you can't sprint or shouldn't sprint. It just means that you're out of practice. Again, myself included, as a 39-year-old man, I wasn't doing that stuff. And rewind the clock 15 years. I was playing basketball 3 days a week and I was super athletic and I was jumping all the time and my body felt great. And then when you stop doing that for a while, you feel silly going back to it because you forgot how to do all that stuff. And there is a level of apprehension because A, you are afraid of getting hurt. B, you are afraid of looking silly, again, myself included. But I don't care. I'm 41 years old. I'm not going to the gym to impress anybody. I don't care what anybody else is doing. I teach my clients to be the same way. And the things that we avoid are typically the things that we need to be doing more of, both physiologically and psychologically. And I want to be able to create strong, autonomous people, both mentally and physically.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think important with that, both mentally and physically, is that sometimes we want to like throw ourselves, like if we accept that, we want to throw ourselves in there and like, oh, yes, okay, I'll go and sprint more or I'll run more or whatever it is. But then we go from like doing nothing to wanting to run a 4K and then being
Right.
that the next day, oh, everything is hurting. Oh, I told you I couldn't run anymore with my knee because of my surgery 20 years ago. My doctor
Right.
said I can't run anymore. And it's like, I never told you to go from 0 to 4K. Like, you could have done one lap around the sports track and see how that felt and then stretched a little
Yep.
bit and come back 2 days later and do it again. But like I again, like I'm including myself in with that too, that sometimes we feel like we need to do something drastic and then suddenly like in on the mental side of things too, like change, I'm gonna change who I am, I'm gonna change what I do, and then being it being surprised that it's weird that it doesn't feel like that's our new identity yet, even though we could have made a small gradual transition. Do you see that
Well,
as well?
There's this prevail there's two prevailing ideologies, which one of them I can't stand, and I have to fight this constantly, which is the concept of, if I can't do the full version of it, or the version of it that I perceive to be effective, then I'm not going to do anything at all. So one lap around the track is not good enough because other people are running four laps, or I used to run four laps. Well, you used to also be 25. And you used to also not have a full-time job, and you used to also not have four kids, and you used to also not be married. You used to have a lot more time available to yourself. Now you have 30 seconds a week to do something, and you have to be able to utilize what you have now, not what you used to have. So that's point number one. And then point number two is the concept of the second I start doing something, it has to immediately be something I compete in, which I can't stand that either, because I'm not a competitive person. I just don't care. I compete against myself. I like to be ferociously consistent. And I think being ferociously consistent is way harder than doing some 12-week challenge, or to train for a marathon that you run once and never run again afterwards, or to do 75 hard, or to do whole 30. Like all of these quick things that people do to challenge themselves, it's cool if it's a kickstart to better behaviors for the long term. But if you're consistently having to do these things because you can't build any level of consistency without them, you have to really examine what your ability to commit to anything is. And I'm very able to commit. I started running back in January. I went from not running at all to running again. And I went from not running at all to just running a slow mile, just getting through a mile. I didn't care how fast it was. I didn't care how long it took me. I just wanted to make sure I felt okay. My feet felt okay. My shins felt okay. My Achilles felt okay. My knees, hips. And now I'm running somewhere between 8 to 15 miles per week. So we're looking at what, 10 months later. And it's fun to be a beginner at something, and it's fun to learn how to incorporate these things into your life and how to change and shift your expectations. But it's because I'm curious and because I enjoy that. But most people, again, they go from, well, I don't do anything, to I'm going to go train for a half marathon. Well, yeah, but what about all the other stuff you have going on in your life? What about your risk of injury? What about the fact that you don't do any unilateral strength training work? You don't do any bilateral strength training work? You don't do any rehab, prehab work? You don't stretch? You don't foam roll? You can't just go from a seated position for 10 to 12 hours a day to then running outside for 5 to 7 miles at a clip just because you have this event hanging over your head in 6 months that you arbitrarily place the pressure of yourself on. And nobody else is telling you to do it but you. And ever since I started running, I had plenty of people DMing me all across the country, come join me for this run, and I'm doing this race, and you should do this race, and you should do this race. I don't want to do any of it. Stop inviting me to go run with you. I don't like to run. I don't run with people. I don't like to work out with people, because I want to do it at my own pace, at my own skill set, at my own ability. It's cool that you want a running partner. I don't. It's cool that you want a gym partner. You want to go to a gym class where people are cheering you on. I don't. I have plenty of other leisures in my life where I'm surrounded by people I like to be around, and those are social events for me. But my time in the gym or my time outside running is my time. And I don't want to share that with anybody because it's protective of my mental health. And it's because I like being by myself, because I want to test myself, and I want to be able to see what I'm capable of, not comparing myself to you or anybody else.
I think having that level of self-awareness is just absolutely amazing. And I mean, I have no doubt that a lot of that also comes back to a lot of introspective work and just in general being really aware of who you are. Unfortunately, a lot of people are not that aware of how they function best or who they are. And I think that ties nicely in with something that you talk about a bit, which is how important any act of self-care is, whether that is taking time for yourself, taking time for exercising, taking time to prepare proper nutrition, etc. What do you think is something that's holding people back from that, really, to become aware of how important that is for them?
I believe that as we age, we get so caught up in being task rabbits. It's like we have to jump from task to task. I have children, so I have to take care of all their tasks. Instead of teaching them how to do their own stuff, I'm just doing all of it because it's easier for me to do it than for them to do it. or not asking for help around the house. And now everything is the responsibility of one person in the house, which is again not productive and not sustainable. And then there's also this concept of, well, I don't need to do any of it until it becomes a problem. Well, I don't want to wait for the car to break to fix it. So I'm going to go take the car in for an oil change every 3,000 miles. Just like my body, I'm going to make sure that I'm taking care of it because it's the only one you get. And I don't have a very high tolerance for feeling like shit anymore. Like I don't want to wake up with digestive distress and aches and pains and brain fog. And I don't want to have to struggle through work. And I don't want to have to sleep in on the weekends and miss out on my life and to catch up on the sleep I didn't get during the week. I don't want to live like that. And I see how other people, and I think because I see how so many other people live, it's very easy for me to understand how not how I don't want to live. It's a great example of what I don't want to look like and feel like. And I just think that people don't ever really stop to actually audit or examine any of their own behaviors or how those behaviors make them feel. I know that, like prior to my event and just after my event, I stopped tracking my food and I was giving myself a lot more flexibility as far as like ordering food out. Like, so during the week, instead of like ordering out once or twice, maybe max, I was ordering out like three or four times a week after the event. And obviously, my body composition suffered. I put on a little bit of weight. I wasn't, and more importantly than even that stuff, I just didn't feel good. Like, I didn't feel as productive or as excited to be up in the morning or as vivacious or as positive. I don't have enough time left to feel like that. Like I'm 41 years old and it's going to end in the next 40, 50 years for me. So I have half of my life left and I want to make sure that I get every ounce of that time. And I don't think people value that enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is this saying, I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like if you don't make your own life choices, other people and the society is basically going to make them for you. And I think that that's unfortunately so true for many people where we're just like, oh, this is how I've always been doing it, or this is how it's always been done, or this is how other people's expectations are. That's why I'm going to keep doing it. And with that comes really a big inability, or maybe just like you've never learned to say no more often, to even just like to pause and evaluate, like, do I want to bake those muffins for my dentist's niece's birthday party? Not really, but I'm going to say yes because it's expected of me. Do I really want to go to this party tonight at 9 o'clock, even though my goal is to be in bed by 9 o'clock? Not really, but I'm going to say yes. Like all these things where it's just like we need to learn to say no more often because this is going to carry through with everything. Like literally it's going to, if you're clear on your priorities, it's my priority to be in bed at 9 o'clock, it's gonna eliminate a lot of decision making in the moment. Or if you're clear on, oh, it's my priority to, I don't know, go outside in the first 2 hours of my day, then you know what your morning should look like as well, and you're gonna say no to other invitations and so on. Is there like a way for us to learn to say no more often, or does it just come down to doing it?
Practice. I was a recovered people pleaser. I spent my 20s and my early 30s really caring about what everybody wanted of me and from me. And I said yes to a lot of things I didn't want to say yes to. I said yes to a lot of things that actually pushed my mental and physical health backwards. And I paid the price. And luckily, I was able to recognize it early enough in my life and change it. But it's hard. It's hard when that's your habit, is, you have the kids, and the kids have friends, and they want to go to the thing, and they want to, okay, cool. Like, you can certainly say yes to all of it, or you can come up with stuff for your children and for your family to do together that's not as, as toxic or as, and I'm not saying toxic isn't like bad for you, but more along the lines of like, this just doesn't align with what you actually want. But you have to understand what you actually want. And again, I have no problem saying no to people. When I first moved to San Diego in 2021, I was desperately trying to find circles of people to associate with and to run with because I didn't have any friends here. And then after about 6 months of really spending time like working on my business and starting my business all over again from scratch, because I didn't have any clients, period. I moved out here with a personal training business that I lost in Connecticut and I had to restart online. So I just realized I'm like, I'm happy being alone. I don't mind being by myself. And every time I do hang out with people and say yes to stuff, I don't get a net positive from it. So it's like it's neutral, which I could have, it's take it or leave it. If I didn't go to that thing, my life wouldn't have been worse or better. So what else could I be doing with that time? And that's really what it came down to. And I don't think, again, enough people are spending that level of introspective time to understand what it is that they want, why they're saying yes to things, why, because it's very simple to look at somebody's calendar and understand why they feel overwhelmed and why they feel stressed out. I look at my calendar and it's wide open space. It's wide open space. I tell my clients, text me if you need me, schedule calls when you need me. I don't make people call me. I don't make people sign up for things. I don't want to be on Zoom calls all day long. But other people follow how other people do their work. And I just don't want to do that. I'll take phone calls instead of Zoom calls so I can get 3,000 steps in a half an hour by pacing around my house. If you invite me out to dinner, it better be on a night where it's a night that I have nothing going on and it's 6 p.m. so I can be in bed by 8:30. And it better be at a restaurant that I want to go eat at, or else I'm not going. And if you don't care, I'm going to tell you where we're going to eat because I know you don't give a shit, but I do. And most people, and that's another thing, right? Is like a lot of people say yes to invites, and then the other people that are inviting them suggest the place. And now this person is stuck having to go to a place that they don't want to go to. Well, if you make another suggestion, I'm sure that person will probably be like, okay, cool, whatever. They don't really care. But you care because you have goals. And you have certain ways that you want to feel. So you have to uphold that standard. But if you're always bending to the will of other people, then you don't really have standards. And that's where you really need to examine those areas of opportunity.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think having boundaries is so powerful, and I think the truth is that once we are clear on our boundaries and we actually exert them, we attract the right people, the people that not just accept our boundaries but actually have respect for them. They're like, "Wow, that's cool. You also, you know, whatever, don't drink or go to sleep early or like to exercise daily or whatever it is. Me too." Or you inspire them and motivate them to do the same thing, to follow through with that. And as they always say, like if you suddenly put in, or if you put in boundaries and you lose people because of that, you only lose them because those people benefited from you not having boundaries in the first place. So yeah, that should make us think for sure, I think. But yeah, I think that's a really important message, just to practice saying no more often. And in my experience, it gets easier the more we do it, and actually starts feeling really good. Initially, you might feel a little bit like if you break out of that people pleaseritis, it feels a bit uncomfortable. But after a while, you're like, damn, that felt good.
Like I have a crazy week. I have a concert on Friday night. I have dinner plans on Saturday night. I have another concert on Monday night or on Sunday night. So 3 days in a row, like I will be up past my normal bedtime. I don't do this very often. I mean, it might happen twice a year. But if you look at other people's schedules, it happens every weekend. And then they are also the same people that are complaining that they can't comply to nutrition or they can't find time to work out. Well, it's like, yeah, you have no energy. And you don't sleep well, and you don't take the time to prepare, and you're always running from thing to thing reactively versus proactively. I'm not surprised why you don't feel good. I'm not surprised why you're fat. I'm not surprised why you're weak, and I'm not surprised why you're depressed. But you are because you're living an illusion, and you think that this is the way that life is supposed to be lived, but you're not even enjoying any of it. That's the other part is if you actually asked people, do you enjoy living like this? They're not going to say yes. But they believe that that's what they're supposed to do. And it's again because they have to look a certain way to people and they have to be a certain way around others. Once you stop and put that baggage down, life is so much more enjoyable. And then you get to surround yourself with people who are on your level, who have the same goals as you do, who want the same things out of life. And you're actually much more protective of who you spend time with because that time is valuable and that time is precious. And how you feel is valuable and precious. Again, if you're in your 40s and 50s, you're talking about 30 or 40 years left. And you get to choose how you feel during the next 30 or 40 years. And if you choose to keep living another person's life, you're not going to get what you want. And you're going to be that person who's 85, hooked up to machinery on multiple medications with a bunch of regrets. And I just refuse to be that person.
I think that's a very, very powerful message. I really hope that people make the time to just evaluate their life a little bit more, to evaluate where they could be saying no more often and where they could invest a bit more energy into self-care. Aram, I just want to say thank you so much for this chat today. I really hope people go and check out your content. I love all your daily posts, your messages that you put out. They're very honest, just like you are. And when I'm talking to you as well, I love it. And I hope people go and check out the Real Coaches Summit next year. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Lisa. You too, and be safe out there.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Aram. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.